We'll assemble for the first rain report of 2013 in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the cozy studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, with this rain report. Winter can be a depressing season for some. However, for kit builders and those new to the art, the long winter nights and cold days provide excellent opportunities for building simple yet effective low-powered radios and accessories. To make your efforts really pay off and to maximize the fun of the process, here's an excerpt from the 2012 Dayton Hamvention Kit Building Forum that was moderated by our featured speaker, Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB. We suggest you record this program or grab some writing utensil or keyboard and take some notes for future reference.
I'm Joe, K0NEB, from Lincoln, Nebraska. Of course, when you're on the sweepstakes with a call like that, they all like you because they all need Nebraska. So that's why I picked it. Actually, it used to be the call sign of the Nebraska State Fair many years ago. I write the monthly kit building column for CQ Magazine. How many of you get CQ Magazine? Let's see a show of hands. Wow, that's great. And the rest of you, the booth is in the main arena. Okay, got to give a plug. The booth is in the main arena. I'd like to talk about a few kit building basics. I always like to give my hints and tips and a few specifics so that makes the process of kit building a lot easier. I can't emphasize this one enough. I always tell people to have an assortment of pre-sorted, standardized parts available. Common values are resistors, capacitors, diodes, transistors, and ICs. And there are some dealers every once in a while, you can see them, some out in the flea market even, that are selling these bins that are already pre-sorted that have all sorts of different common values of resistors and so forth. That has a big advantage because sometimes if your kit's missing a 100K resistor, you don't want to have to run to Radio Shack or hundreds of miles or whatever to get one. It's always good to have one. And you can always use it to upgrade or modify your kit. You can change the value. If you read something online that they changed something to a 37K resistor or something, you have it and you can put it in there. 9-volt battery snaps. I've noticed that sometimes those like to break off and stuff, so it's always good to have spares of those. Commonly used plugs and jacks, like quarter-inch plugs, eighth-inch. 2 and 3 conductor plugs and jacks, RCA plugs and jacks. There's a guy called the Dollar Dude over in the North Hall. He's got a lot of that stuff, and there's several other places out in the flea market. Same thing goes for 12-volt coaxial power plugs and jacks. And make sure you remember which size you need, either 2.1 or 2.5 millimeter, the bigger the little hole in the middle. And make sure if the kit specifies that the center pin is positive or negative, because sometimes it's not. So make sure you do that so you don't zap it. Solder wick and desoldering aids, you always got to have that handy because I'm not perfect. I make a lot of mistakes sometimes, get distracted and so forth, or misidentify a part. So make sure you have your desoldering things handy. I get an emery board for enameled wire, like on toroids. Emery boards are not expensive. You can get them in bulk, like at Walgreens and so forth. I happen to like going to trade shows, home shows, whatever. And when you go through these things, you can pick those up off the tables, and those are great. I'll grab a fistful of those. Very useful for enameled wire. And so make sure also that you have the batteries needed, your 9-volt AA and AAA batteries, because the most frustrating part of building a kit is when you get it all done and you can't power it up because you don't have the battery. Going along with that, nice to have would be a variable voltage power supply that's metered so you can supply whatever voltage it needs. I worked on one kit that needed 5 volts, another one needed 9, one that needed 12. Frequency counter helps. You can get a little Sharp pocket counter, not too expensive. I think they're around 120 or so from MFJ, and I think StarTech is in the other room, and they have them as well. An oscilloscope, once you learn how to use it, is probably one of the most valuable tools you can have. Scopes used to be $400 or $500, even used. I've seen several today that were under $100 in the flea market. Dummy load, of course, depends on what size of radio, what size of kit you're using, but most kits are QRP. So a dummy load that's capable of handling 5 to 10 watts is very useful. That way, when you key up that transmitter that you first put together, you don't burn out the output transistor because most QRP kits do not have any protection for SWR. A real good thing to have if you're going to get real serious into kit building is a vacuum desoldering station. Now, I saw out there today they have the Hayco 808, which looks like a big old-fashioned soldering gun, but it has a hollow tip, and when you pull the trigger, it sucks up the solder further away, and that's kind of cool. And they have regular console type ones where the gun is on a cord. A general coverage receiver is really good because you want to know if the band's really open or not. So when you finish a receiver, are you really hearing what you're supposed to be hearing or not? It's also good for entertainment. You can listen to local broadcast stations while you're putting together the kit as well. And also along that line, an AM/FM clock radio helps so you can keep track of time. When I get started building, I'll be going along and I'll hear a legal station ID, and I look up at the clock and it says, it's 3 o'clock. I thought, okay. So I dig back down and I'm a couple parts down the road. I heard that legal ID again. I look up, it's 4 o'clock already. So you got to kind of keep track of time, so make sure you have a little radio on. And in our part of the country, it's also good to have it on in case we go into a storm watch. Kind of reminds you so that you're ready to go out on storm watch and that sort of thing. A random wire antenna for testing receivers, another thing that's real frustrating is to put it on your bench and put a clip lead on it. You're not going to hear anything. So stick a wire out the window, just let it hang, and hook it up. It's good for testing a receiver. A solder roll holder. I just picked up a new one. It's a double decker. Holds two rolls of solder, and it was only $9. Holds the solder, and it has a guide, so that when you pull the solder out, you can draw it easily, and it doesn't tangle up, and keeps the solder away from everything else on your bench, and makes life a lot easier.
You're listening to some kit building hints and tips from veteran kit builder and perennial Dayton Hamvention Forum speaker, Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB. We'll conclude our excerpt from his 2012 talk in a moment. This is The Rain Report, available through iTunes on your iPhone.
Kit storage to keep your parts secure. I have two cats in the house, and they like to jump up on things. And if they get on the bench, we have a problem because I have parts all spread out in cupcake tins. So I have these little boxes. This is a Plano 1354 tackle box. It's also sold in different colors. I found it at hardware stores for $18. I found it at fishing tackle places for $30. It's the same box. It's just different colors. I've also seen it as a makeup and jewelry case that's pink and purple. But you can get the same darn thing. It's a Plano 1354. You write down that number and you can Google it. And you'll find the price varies quite a bit because it comes in several different colors. The trays pull out. They have movable dividers. So you can generally, in most kits, you can put all the parts in one of those trays. And you can keep several kits in different trays. And in the top, you can keep some tools and you can keep your boards that are partially done. Give you a few hints. I always tell people to heat the connection well enough to let the solder flow and use as small a tip as possible to avoid solder bridges. Use solder that isn't too thick so you avoid sloppy connections so you don't get as many solder bridges. And I like to make them look a little better when you have what we call a double-sided plated circuit board. I like to get the solder to flow all the way through the hole so it holds it. It doesn't have to go all the way through, but I like to get it in most of the way. So what I do is after I put the solder on, I go back over it with the tip again without any solder, and I hold it down to the joint between the wire and the board, and I heat it up again, and it draws it more towards the part, and then I draw the iron away down the wire, and it pulls the excess solder away. Then I clean off my tip, and I call it the Hershey's Kiss, and that's what it looks like. If it looks like a blob or a ball, it's not good. If it looks like a Hershey's Kiss, you got it. Then I trim the leads close as I can to the board. Be really careful that the clippings don't stick to the bottom of the board, and that happens because the flux from the solder makes kind of a sticky surface on the bottom of the board. So what I do is I make sure I take my finger over it and there's no little tiny pieces that are stuck between two connections. So double check whenever you do that for tiny pieces of wire or solder that could cause a short. The trouble with toroids, I know a lot of people don't like building kits that have toroids in them, but they're actually not too bad. A lot of kit builders like to build the toroids first so that when they get to that part, all they got to do is put the part on the board. Follow the instructions they give you meticulously. The toroids wound right or not is the difference between the kit working and not. So what I do is I unwind the wire carefully so that I don't have any kinks. I just carefully unwind it and let it hang down to the floor. And you count the turns of wire, because they might say 18 turns, is how many times it goes through the middle of the donut. So don't count the outside. You take and count on the inside of the donut how many pieces of wire come through that hole. I then use a cigarette lighter to burn off the insulation. I just kind of singe it so it blackens it. And then I use the emery board to get rid of the black residue off of it. Then I use a soldering iron and solder to tin the wire so it's carefully coated with solder. And then finally, I place it on the board and solder it in place. By doing that, the component sticks in real good, the solder flows correctly. I've seen a lot of kits where the wire wasn't stripped correctly and it wasn't tinned, and it looks like it's soldered okay, but it's not making contact. So be really careful with toroids. Handling ICs, I always tell people to follow good ESD procedures. In this part of the country, you have a pretty cold winter, so you ever get a static zap off a doorknob and stuff? Well, that's going to totally wipe out a CMOS part. So be really careful. I use a pin straightener. It's kind of an unusual looking thing to straighten out the pins on my ICs before I insert them in the board or in the sockets. Saves getting a bent pin that gets tucked under and doesn't make contact. Don't overheat an IC. Sometimes I'll solder one or two pins, let it cool down for a while, and I'll hit another couple of pins. And I always double check the orientation. Make sure that dot or that notch is where that is marked on the circuit board. Double check that orientation with the picture and the diagram in the book. And make sure if you're using a socket that the chip is fully inserted. This is a problem I've run into. Somebody will show me a kit. Oh, it doesn't work. And the chip's all in place and everything, but when you push it down, it snaps into that socket. That's when it's actually making contact. So for my tips, I tell people to remove the distractions, use voicemail. RTFM is a computer term. Read the fine manual. You thought I was going to say something else, didn't you? Use a cookie sheet to keep things from getting away and protect your surface. Cookie sheets with the lip on it is great, especially with surface mount parts. Your resistors like to roll off the table and into the carpet, then you'll never find them. So be sure to have your batteries or power supply ready, as well as the plugs, jacks, cables, and accessories. Make sure you make up a power plug that's the right polarity for the kit before you start building it so that you know when you're done, you can plug it in, you're all ready to go. Once again, keep those standard spare parts on hand. Keep your soldering iron tip clean. Use adequate lighting and magnification. I know about 10 years ago or so, when I came here, I realized I couldn't read my own notes, so I decided I better get glasses. And at home, I use a lighted magnifier. And I always tell people to take your time and enjoy the fun.
Kit building guru, Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB, excerpted from his 2012 Dayton Hamvention Forum presentation. Editorial note, if you haven't tried your hand at building a radio kit, you're not alone. Why not encourage your radio club to take on such a project as a club exercise this winter? The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2013, Rain, all rights reserved. For Rain's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.